Thank you, Admiral,
Ylarin said. He tapped a key on his remote, and a hollow of a section of the outer rim appeared.
Baton sector,
he identified.
We've been noting a rise in criminal and insurgent activities here for the past several months. Up until now, it was assumed to be the usual random flailings of malcontents. However, we now have indications that some of these groups may be starting to work together, or at least to share information and coordinate plans. None of them is much above nuisance level, but we feel this is a trend we need to stamp out before it spreads.
How deep is this cooperation?
Thrawn asked.
Not very at the moment,
Ylarin said.
Insurgent groups are paranoid, practically by definition, and they typically don't trust one another any more than they trust their own governments. But as I say, they're starting to talk.
So we need to shut them up, Price said.
A question, Colonel,
Governor Restos put in.
There are four governors here, representing four affected systems. Yet I see the commanders of only three task forces. May I ask which of our systems you're planning to ignore?
The insurgents of Lothal are already being dealt with by Admiral Constantine,
Danassius said.
Governor Price requested to be here as an observer, since her system is close to the area of concern and is experiencing much of the same trouble.
I see,
Restos said, eyeing Price with a look of suspicion.
As long as Baton will be getting sufficient attention.
Absolutely, Governor,
Ylarin said.
In fact, we're going to start with your world, since it seems to be the focal point for activity in the sector. If we can push back the insurgents there, the other groups should wither away.
What do you mean, push back?
Wistran asked.
Where are you pushing back from?
At the moment, from a place called Scrim Island, 300 kilometers west of Baton's main continent,
Ylarin said.
5 days ago, a group of insurgents overran and took command of the Imperial garrison there. They're holding at least 100 hostages, mostly Navy troopers and techs, but also some civilian workers. They have full control of the island's energy shield, its shoreline defenses, and 3 of its ion cannons. Admiral Thrawn, this one will be yours.
Have you a schematic of the facility?
Thrawn asked.
Certainly.
The hollow changed to an aerial view of Scrim Island.
You said there were 3 ion cannons,
Thrawn said.
Yet I see 8 fortified emplacements along the shoreline.
The last status report about 6 weeks ago stated that 5 of the cannons were awaiting replacement Cathdron tubes,
Ylarin said.
Which 5?
Irrelevant, I'm afraid,
Ylarin said.
The insurgents have had enough time to switch out the 3 functioning tubes, so we don't know which 3 cannons are operational.
Shouldn't matter,
Admiral Durrell said.
He waved a hand in casual dismissal.
You're not going to breach from above anyway. Best approach is by low-altitude incursion.
The shoreline defenses are more than adequate to repel even a sizable attack,
Thrawn pointed out.
You haven't been in the Navy long, have you?
Durrell asked.
His tone holds condescension. His gaze drops to the new Admiral's insignia plaque. His expression holding disapproval and resentment.
If you had, you'd know that if more than half the island's ion cannons are down, then at least half the shore defenses are too. A few assault boats worth of stormtroopers and it'll be over.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. I will need more time to study the situation.
There is no time,
Danassius said.
Every hour the garrison is held, the reputation of the Empire is tarnished a little more. Your orders are to proceed at once to Baton and release the insurgents' hold on Scrim.
His lip twists.
Destroy the island if you have to, but remove the rebels.
Destroying the island would also kill the hostages, Thrawn said. There are better ways.
but they require more reconnaissance and planning.
The room is silent. The others' body stances hold disapproval and discomfort.
Very well,
Danasius said.
His voice is stiff.
If you don't think you can handle it, the 96th can go to Salmon instead. Would that assignment be more to your liking?
I will go wherever the Navy wishes,
Thrawn said.
You've had enough time with the 96th to operate smoothly together.
I have, Admiral.
Very well. Admiral Durrell, you seem confident that the rebels on Scrim can be easily neutralized. Your 103rd will deal with them.
With pleasure,
Durrell said.
His voice holds eagerness and gloating.
Good.
Danasius gestures to Yularen, his expression holding disappointment.
Colonel Yularen, you may continue your briefing.
You disapprove of my decision,
Thrawn said, as he and Eli walked down the outer steps toward the landing pad where their transport waited.
I think everyone disapproved of your decision, sir, Eli said sourly. Whatever capital you might have had with the High Command, I think you just burned it.
For the moment,
Thrawn said calmly, pulling out his data pad and keying it on.
That will change.
I don't see how,
Eli said, trying to see what Thrawn was doing. Images were flashing across the data pad's display, but from Eli's angle, he couldn't get any details.
Admiral Durrell seemed awfully certain he could take back the island.
Admiral Durrell is always certain of himself,
Thrawn said.
But he has a tendency to value speed over precision. Sometimes that serves him well. More often, it leads to miscalculation.
You think this is one of those miscalculations?
I'm certain of it,
Thrawn said.
And that failure would be costly, both to his task force and to him personally.
Wonderful,
Eli muttered. More men and women hurt or killed because of the arrogance of their superiors.
Should we say something?
I did say something,
Thrawn reminded him.
I said the situation required more study.
So we just let him and the 103rd walk into the wall?
Admiral Durrell has taken a stand,
Thrawn said.
We have offered advice. He has not taken it. We must now stand aside and allow him to test his confidence.
I suppose,
Eli said, craning his neck.
The images were still flowing across Thrawn's datapad. May I ask what you're doing, sir?
Studying Samony art,
Thrawn told him.
I need a better sense of the culture.
They were in sight of the landing platform by the time Thrawn finally put the datapad away. They walked toward their shuttle, and Eli winced with fresh embarrassment at how pathetic their nondescript light freighter looked, tucked in among the more impressive Lambda shuttles of the other admirals. He still didn't know why Thrawn had chosen that particular craft, one they'd taken from their most recently defeated smuggler gang, instead of bringing his own Lambda. Eli's best guess had been that he'd hoped to show it off as a trophy to the other admirals. Somehow he'd never gotten around to that.
You disapprove of my choice of transport as well.
Eli glared sideways at him.
Do you have to do that?
I find it tends to bypass unnecessary conversation,
Thrawn said, pulling out his comlink.
Admiral Thrawn for Commander Pharaoh.
Yes, Admiral.
The Chimera's new captain said briskly.
Have we orders, sir?
We do, Commander, Thrawn said. You are to take the task force to Salmon. There is insurgent activity there that we are tasked with eliminating.
Yes, sir,
Pharaoh said, a hint of uncharacteristic uncertainty in her voice.
You say I'm to take the force. You won't be with us?
That is correct,
Thrawn confirmed.
Commander Vanto and I have an errand elsewhere.
I see,
Pharaoh said.
She was still getting used to being the Chimera's captain, Eli knew, and he could tell she wasn't entirely happy about being thrown into a mission this soon without her admiral there to watch over her shoulder. But her usual self-confidence was already starting to reassert itself.
Very well, Admiral. Any specific instructions?
Of course, Thrawn said. You will enter this system at a distance and disperse the rest of the task force. You will then bring the Chimera in close to Salmon and demand surrender of the insurgents. Our intelligence indicates that they are protected from ground or air assault, but their shields and bunkers are unlikely to withstand Star Destroyer turbolasers for long.
So I'm to threaten an attack, but the real goal is to drive them out of their positions?
Exactly, Thrawn said. You may need to fire a few times to persuade them to abandon their stronghold, but you should not have to utterly destroy it. The task force may also need to destroy some of the fleeing ships, but you should be able to capture the majority undamaged.
What if they head instead to other locales on the planet itself?
I think that unlikely, Thrawn said. Their first instinct will be to seek the safety and darkness of space.
Understood, sir,
Pharaoh said. She was with the plan now, and Eli had no doubt she would carry it to completion. For all her casual attitude toward proper decorum, she was smart enough and generally knew what she was doing.
If there's one thing they won't get out there, it's safety.
Very good, Commander, Thrawn said. Before you depart for Salmon, detach the Chirac for my use. Inform Captain Brento that I'll speak with her privately once I've decided on her course of action.
Yes, sir. Shall I report when I've completed my mission, or shall I wait for you to initiate contact?
The latter would be best, Thrawn said. Good hunting to you.
And to you, Admiral.
Thrawn returned the comlink to his belt.
And now to our errand, he said.
Yes, sir, Eli said.
Are we treading on dangerous ice here, sir? Danasius ordered us to go to Salmon.
Not precisely, Thrawn assured him. Fleet Admiral Danasius said the 96th was to deal with the insurgency there. No specific mention was made of you or me.
Eli grimaced. A fine distinction, and one he doubted anyone involved would appreciate. But Thrawn was an admiral, and Eli was a commander, and he'd been given his orders.
Yes, sir, he said. May I ask where we're going?
To Baton, of course, Thrawn said. Admiral Durrell is convinced he'll have no difficulty capturing Scrim Island. I am interested in seeing if he is correct.
Standard siege array, Vanto murmured. His tone held interest and alertness, but so far he was withholding judgment on Admiral Durrell's tactics.
No obvious response yet from the island.
They may be negotiating, Thrawn pointed out. The ships are indeed set out in a siege array, but it is not precisely standard. Two of the light cruisers are farther out from the Judicator than normal, and Durrell has launched no starfighter screen. We wouldn't pick up a tight comm signal from here.
True, Vanto agreed.
I keep expecting someone to notice us and order us away.
Our transponder identifies us as a properly licensed freighter,
Thrawn reminded him.
There is a ping from one of Durrell's screening corvettes. The freighter's transponder pings back. A moment of hesitation. One final ping, and then the corvette ceases further inquiry. They no doubt assume we're waiting to assess the extent of the battle before committing ourselves to resume travel toward the surface.
Yes, Vanto said wryly. Lucky for us, you had the foresight to pick this as our transport.
He raised his eyebrows.
Or was it luck? Did you pull something out of the comm traffic that made you suspect we might need something lower key than a military lambda?
I had some suspicions, Thrawn said.
Vanto's insight and perception had grown remarkably over the years. He saw many of the patterns now, quickly grasping the underlying reasons and motivations. The deeper reasons still sometimes eluded him, but there was time. The young commander's tactical abilities continued to grow, though Vanto himself was not fully aware of his progress. The focus now would be on improving his observation and training his mind to assemble data and reach conclusions more quickly. In battle, such reflexive decisions often mean the difference between victory and defeat.
There is a series of flashes from the distant task force.
First salvo away, Vanto announced. Full turbo lasers from the Judicator. Island's energy shield looks like it's holding.
Any reduction in strength?
Not that these sensors can detect from here, Vanto said, his forehead furrowed in concentration.
Second salvo away. Third salvo away.
Looks like Durl's got all his ships firing now. Still no response from the insurgents.
That will soon change, Thrawn said.
The screening corvettes are now being brought closer to the Star Destroyer, as Durl responds to his initial failure to destroy the island's shield.
By ordering fire from all of his ships, Durl has now demonstrated their full capabilities, and has also close-marked all their positions, Vanto pointed out. If the island's commander is smart, he'll counterattack before those positions change. And there they go. Shields seem to be contracting. I can see bits of the western and southern shorelines. Durl's still pounding at the center.
On the main display, two streams of red-tinged green bursts shoot up from the edges of the island.
Eye on fire! Vanto snapped. Direct hits on the Judicator!
Incapacitated? Thrawn asked.
The light cruisers and frigates have opened fire again as Durl orders their turbolasers to target the ion cannons on the northern and western shorelines.
But the action was too late. The shield edge had expanded again, following the ion cannon salvos, and the turbolaser bolts spattered harmlessly away. The escort ships continued firing, some at the now protected ion cannons, others at the center of the shield, in an attempt to overload the generator.
Now Durl's just flailing, Vanto muttered,
his earlier withholding of judgment turning rapidly to scorn. Probably ordered everyone to keep firing while he tries to get his systems running again. Okay, shield's contracting again. This time it's the northern shoreline opening up.
Again, Durl fails to notice or react.
The escort ships continue to fire uselessly toward the western and southern emplacements as an ion cannon on the northern shoreline opens fire.
Damn! Vanto breathed. Perfect timing. Whoever's in charge down there is good.
Damage?
Thrawn asked. The latest ion blast had targeted the frigate and two cruisers on the Judicator's portside flank, sending sputtering sheets of energy across their hulls, damaging sensors and turbolaser targeting and control systems.
Hits on the portside escorts,
Vanto reported.
They'll be down to secondary weapons and auxiliary drives now.
Probably can still get out of there if Durl releases them, but another blast or two in the right places and they'll be drifting.
Again, Durl continues his ineffective attack instead of adjusting to his opponent's tactics. The escorts are still holding position as another ion salvo shoots upward from the island.
But this time, as the burst raked across the same group of escorts, a stream of 8 small space freighters appeared from beneath the eastern edge of the shield and headed toward the continent 300 kilometers away.
Judicator's definitely lost his turbo lasers, Vanto said grimly. Might still have auxiliary drive, maybe enough to get clear.
Durl's not trying, though. The 2 light cruisers and frigate that took that last attack seem to have been immobilized.
An attack focused on the Judicator and the escorts on Durl's portside flank, Thrawn said.
The freighters continue to fly low over the water. Their commander continually veers the group back and forth, taking advantage of both the minimal cloud cover and the reflected sunlight glare to achieve minimal observability from above.
The flank opposite to the direction he sent his freighters.
Freighters?
Banto asked, frowning.
Where?
Flying eastward from the island,
Thrawn said.
Running low and on minimal power, which renders them largely invisible to ships already under ion attack.
And to ships that aren't under attack but are concentrating all their attention on the ships that are,
Banto said.
Okay, I've got them now. I fell for the trick too.
He looked at Thrawn.
I gather you were expecting it? It was one possible reason the starboard escorts were being ignored at the expense of the portside ships,
Thrawn said.
Interesting, though. Standard procedure would have been the exact opposite. To target the escorts on the Judicator's starboard side in order to minimize response to the freighter's departure.
It's a long way to the continent,
Banto pointed out. No point in getting clear if everyone knows you're on the way and where you're going.
Yes. Seven of the freighters are still traveling eastward at wave-top altitude. The eighth, now effectively clear of the battle zone, is rising towards space. An interesting moment for the commander to split his convoy.
Which raises the question of where they are going. In particular, the one that's broken off and is heading into space.
Your analysis? Banto pondered a moment.
I can't tell from here whether those are freighters or personnel carriers, he said slowly. But there's no reason for them to ship people off the island in the middle of a battle, either their own forces or their hostages. So, freighters.
One obvious reason for taking Scrim is all the military ordnance stored there. So those ships probably represent everything that wasn't fused to the ground. Seven to insurgent cells on the mainland. One to Dinash or Salmon.
Or to elsewhere,
Thrawn said.
Yes.
Banto leaned closer to the sensor display.
Shield shifting again.
Looks like they're going to give the Judicator another blast. But this time, it wasn't an ion cannon burst that shot upward from the island's western shoreline. Instead, it was the intense green fire of a turbolaser salvo from an emplacement to the north of the western ion cannon. The barrage struck the Judicator's starboard superstructure, burning into and through the hull metal.
Banto caught his breath. Damn! A turbolaser?
Danasius never said the island had functional turbolasers.
He may not have known.
A second burst of fire shimmers through the atmosphere, again delivering its energy against Durrell's flagship. Again, Durrell makes no move to counter or evade.
The freighter angling away from the planet is likely to make the jump to lightspeed soon. Hail it.
Banto shot him a startled look.
You want me to hail it?
Yes, Thrawn said. A tight comm signal, of course, to keep the conversation private. We're the Slipknot, and you're a weapons smuggler named Horatio Fig.
Banto's momentary confusion cleared into understanding.
So that's the real reason you put us in a captured smuggling ship.
Am I buying or selling? Whichever will gain us an invitation to visit his base.
An invitation to his base?
Banto took a deep breath.
Okay, here we go.
He keyed the comm and adjusted for tight beam.
Unidentified freighter. This is the freighter Slipknot,
he called.
Looks like you're scorching out of here. Need any assistance?
There was no response.
Again,
Thrawn said quietly.
Banto nodded. Let me try it another way, freighter. I'm guessing you have some fresh merchandise. I'm also guessing you want to keep it. You want to be civil? Or you want me to call you out to the imps?
Don't even think about it, Slipknot.
The voice is dark and angry, holding both suspicion and threat.
Not thinking it,
Banto assured him. Just trying to start a friendly conversation. If I'm right about your current cargo, there might be something there I could take off your hands.
Forget it. Already spoken for.
Fine,
Vanto said.
In that case, maybe you'd like to add a little frosting to your new cake.
There was a long pause.
You deal?
The voice still holds suspicion, but also now holds cautious interest.
A little of everything,
Vanto told him.
Since you hit a military base and not a spice dealer, I'm guessing you're mostly interested in weapons. So, arms dealer it is. You in the market or aren't you?
There was another silence from the other end.
We might be. The boss says he's willing to talk.
A light flickered on the board.
I've sent you the coordinates. Jump whenever you're ready.
Got it, Vanto said. Be right there.
Vanto cut off the comm channel.
Well, we either fooled him or we didn't,
Vanto said.
What now?
We prepare to follow,
Thrawn said.
You mean, right now?
Vanto asked.
What about the Judicator?
A third turbo laser salvo rakes the Star Destroyer. The four undamaged escort ships fire toward the weapon, but once again, are too late, as the island's shield closes over it. There is a pattern to the attacks, but Durrell fails to recognize or exploit it. There's no aid we can render,
Thrawn said.
I've already transmitted an emergency distress signal on Admiral Durrell's behalf. Our efforts are best directed elsewhere.
Understood,
Vanto said, frustrated, but recognizing the reality of the situation.
The shield shrinks again, this time opening the eastern shoreline. The escort ships alter their aim, directing a fresh attack against the ion cannon emplacements now exposed. It is much the same response Durrell has already attempted several times. But as anticipated, the island commander now changes tactics. No ion cannon blasts come. Instead, as the Imperial ships continue to fire, the shield shrinks again from the western shoreline, unnoticed by the preoccupied and battered Imperial ships. The escorts are still firing at the eastern emplacements when a new barrage of ion fire from the western emplacement silences their weapons.
Odd,
Vanto said.
Explain. Our friend in the freighter,
Vanto said.
He's far enough out to jump, but he hasn't. Wonder if he's having trouble with his hyperdrive.
Perhaps,
Thrawn said.
What other possibilities are there?
He could be waiting to see how the battle goes,
Vanto suggested,
grabbing as much data as he can before jumping. Or he could be sending or receiving some last-minute instructions.
The freighter abruptly flickered with pseudo-motion and was gone.
I guess he got all he wanted,
Vanto said.
So now we follow?
On the island, the shield once again shrinks to expose the insurgents' turbo laser. But the Imperial ships are no longer in a position to respond in a sufficiently timely manner. As before, the Judicator is the target of the attack. Neutralize, attack, feint, attack. It was an efficient pattern, carried out with expert timing.
You're having doubts?
I don't know,
Vanto said slowly.
He gave up those coordinates awfully easily. This could be a trap.
True,
Thrawn said.
On the other hand, I doubt he would be foolish enough to offer his base's true location. More likely, we have a rendezvous point where we can be studied more closely.
Not sure that sounds any better.
There are risks, Thrawn said. The outcome will depend on how eagerly they want new weapons. Allow me to suggest one other possible reason for him to have delayed his departure. Tell me, what are the other seven freighters doing?
The other... Oh, right. The rest of the group.
Vanto readjusted the sensors.
Still heading for the continent.
Only... interesting. Their vectors are diverging. They're not headed for the same place anymore, but seem to be going to 7 different spots.
If there were an Imperial observer watching, he would now be offered a choice,
Thrawn said.
He could attempt to follow the 8th freighter into space, or remain here and track the 7 to the insurgents' other strong points.
After the 8th drew all the attention to himself, Banto said, good chance he's out there somewhere waiting to see how quickly we follow him.
Or if we follow him at all,
Thrawn said.
If you were in command, which would you choose? The 1 or the 7?
The island's turbolaser blast continued to batter the Judicator, tearing at its hull and weapons. The ion cannons have again opened fire, sending fresh barrages at the escort ships, preventing them from moving to assist.
I'd probably go with... Wait a minute,
Banto said with sudden understanding.
I don't have to choose, do I? You already guessed we'd need backup. Which is why you detached the Chirac from the 96th. I assume it's lurking around here somewhere?
It is indeed,
Thrawn said.
Excellent.
Captain Brento is observing the planet, including those 7 freighters. We may therefore turn our attention to the 8th freighter.
Yes.
Banto gave the sensor display one final look, clearly reluctant to leave the 103rd locked in desperate battle.
All right, let's do it.
Chapter 24.
There are times in every commander's life when he must yield the stick of authority to a subordinate. Sometimes the reason is one of expertise, when the subordinate has skills the commander lacks. Sometimes it is positional, when the subordinate is in the right place at the right time and the commander is not. Often it is anticipated there will be loss of direct communication, which means the subordinate may be given general instructions, but must then carry them out on his own initiative as the situation flows around him. No commander enjoys those moments. Most subordinates fear them as well. Those who do not fear already betray the overconfidence that nearly always leads to disaster. But the moments must be faced, and all will learn from them, whether to satisfaction or to sorrow.
They reach the coordinates to find the freighter waiting for them.
Took your sweet time about it,
the other growled.
Trouble?
Eli took a deep breath. If there was one group he'd really gotten to know during his time in the Navy, it was smugglers, arms merchants, thieves, and general assorted scoundrels. He knew how they behaved, talked, and thought. The trick was to make himself think and talk the same way. He keyed the comm.
Weren't planning on using the hyperdrive at all until you showed up. Didn't think you'd get bored so easy.
Yeah, ha ha. Who are you?
Name's Horatio Fig.
What were you doing at Baton?
Trolling for bargains. And customers, Eli said. I heard about your Scrim Island thing and thought I'd come see if you were interested in doing some business. Buying or selling. Like I said, I do both.
Well, personally, I'd just as soon blur you into dust and be done with it. But the boss wants to see you, so I guess you get to live a little longer. Follow me.
Thanks,
Eli said, turning onto the freighter's vector.
You won't regret this.
I already do. And don't try to run. I'm not the only one out here.
The comm clicked off.
Now what?
He asked.
Now we prepare,
Thrawn said, unstrapping and climbing out of his seat.
Stay with him and keep watch. I'll be back in a moment.
10 minutes later, with their destination visible on the displays,
he returned.
I see we've arrived.
Just about, Eli said, frowning. Thrawn had his tunic draped over his arm with a small holdout blaster in his other hand.
It looks like an old Clone Wars-era nomad. I'm not familiar with those.
They were a sort of traveling ship repair shop that came into systems after the battles were over and the fleets left, Eli explained. Repair facilities were usually hit pretty hard, and these ships came in to pick up some of the slack for the locals.
You realize taking off your tunic isn't going to fool anyone, right? It isn't intended to, Thrawn said. Take off your tunic and put on this one.
Okay, but it won't fit.
Whoa!
Eli interrupted himself as he spotted the fresh blaster burn in the tunic.
What's that? You took this tunic from an officer you killed, Thrawn said. That's why it doesn't fit. You wear it because it intimidates people.
Okay, Eli said, frowning at the tunic as he quickly stripped off his own. Thrawn's admiral insignia plaque, he saw, had been replaced by a lieutenant's plaque.
A lieutenant's plaque?
He sent Thrawn a sharp look.
Yes, the admiral confirmed. My old remote, modified for the current need. When the time comes, press the tile closest to the center of your chest. That time being, you'll know. Here.
He offered Eli the holdout blaster.
Hide it somewhere. They'll take it from you, but it would look suspicious if you weren't carrying a backup weapon.
So I keep this one, too? Eli asked, nodding toward his blaster as he smoothed the sealing strip on Thrawn's tunic. The garment was definitely two sizes too big for him.
Yes, Thrawn said. It will be a sample of the merchandise you have for sale.
Okay, Eli said, fresh doubts nagging at him. Playing this insane role on a comm was one thing. Playing it in person was something else. He forced the thought away. The whole essence of being a scoundrel was self-confidence. If he couldn't fake that, he was dead.
Where will you be? Engineering our escape, Thrawn said. In the meantime, learn as much about them as you can.
Right. The Nomad was coming into view ahead, and Eli could see that there were six small ships already lined up in its long, full-flank repair bay. Tucked in among the parked vessels were three empty slots, with flashing approach lights marking the one in the center.
Just remember that I can't keep this roll up forever. I'll be as quick as I can, Thrawn said.
He left the cockpit, taking Eli's tunic with him.
Vig, there's a landing slot marked for you,
the freighter pilot said, veering out of Eli's path.
Land and come outside. Someone will be waiting.
Eli keyed the transmitter.
Understood. I hope there's something to eat. I'm starving.
Just be ready to talk,
the other said sourly.
Because you'll be doing a lot of that.
Three armed men were waiting for Eli when he walked down the freighter's ramp.
Well, well,
one of them sneered.
An Imperial. What a surprise.
And you're exactly the kind of idiot I wear this for,
Eli said, putting tired contempt into his voice.
Did you even notice that it doesn't fit?
Or see the blaster burn?
One of the others added, pointing his blaster toward Eli's stomach.
Which you can't see if I angle the comm cam just right, Eli said. Guaranteed to get people's attention and cooperation.
Not here it doesn't,
the first man said.
That blaster, pull it out, slowly, and kick it over.
Be careful with it,
Eli said, drawing his blaster from its holster and setting it on the deck in front of him. A gentle nudge with his toe sent it spinning across to the guards.
That's part of my stock. Genuine Imperial Navy sidearm.
Can't get those just anywhere.
You'd be surprised,
the first man said.
Arms out and stand still.
Eli complied. The man gestured, and his two companions laid their own blasters on the deck and walked over to Eli, purposeful expressions on their faces. He'd hoped they wouldn't find the holdout blaster hidden under his arm. They did.
More stock?
The first man asked, taking the weapon and frowning at it as the others retrieved their own weapons.
Part stock, part insurance, Eli said. You'd be surprised how many customers try to walk off without paying for their purchases.
I'll bet. Come on.
The docking bay had three hatches leading into the rest of the massive ship. The three men took Eli through the center one, the hatch nearest his freighter. A short walk down a rust-edged corridor, a turn into another corridor, and they arrived at a compartment with a faded plaque that said Shipmaster beside it. The first man stepped forward and tapped the release. The hatch opened, and he gestured Eli forward. Eli took a careful breath.
Self-confidence,
he reminded himself.
Arrogant self-confidence.
With a casual nod at his captor, he walked through the hatchway
and froze.
Seated behind an old desk, a small smile on his face.
Signy?
So, you remember me, the man said, his smile widening a bit. It's good to see you again, Commander Vanto. And please, call me Night Swan.
For a long moment, Eli couldn't breathe. Ever since that first run-in aboard the Dromedar, Night Swan had always kept to the shadows and background. Always. He was the last person Eli had expected to see in charge of the Scrim Island operation. Was this something new? Or had they never really known the man at all? He started as someone poked him hard in the back, forcing his muscles to unfreeze. He stepped into the room.
Have a seat, Night Swan said, gesturing to a chair at the corner of his desk. What was he carrying?
Standard blaster,
the first guard said, brushing past Eli and laying the Navy's sidearm on the desk.
Plus this,
he added, setting the holdout blaster beside it.
Never seen one like it before.
An antique of some sort, Night Swan said, peering closely at it. Clone Wars era?
He asked, looking up at Eli.
Eli shook his head. No idea.
Doesn't really matter, Night Swan said, turning both weapons a few degrees so that they were pointed away from him and directly at Eli. I'm glad that Admiral Thrawn sent you to seek me out, by the way. I always thought you'd been handed a bad set of cards, and your presence here means you'll be spared what the rebels on Scrim Island are doing to him right now.
He frowned, his gaze dropping to the tunic's insignia plaque.
You are a commander, aren't you? I saw the announcement. You haven't been demoted, have you?
No. I'm still a commander, Eli confirmed,
some of his mental haze burning away in a sudden surge of cautious excitement. Night Swan thought it was Thrawn directing that botched attack on the island?
This is just part of the camouflage.
Ah, Night Swan said. Not much of a disguise. You really weren't expecting to be challenged?
Oh, I was expecting to be challenged,
Eli said, his mind racing. Night Swan clearly thought Eli was here alone. His best chance now was to stall.
I just wasn't expecting there to be someone aboard who'd ever seen me before, let alone you. So what, you've thrown in with a bunch of crazies?
They're hardly crazies, Night Swan said. Your empire's corrupt, Commander. Corrupt, dangerous, and ultimately self-defeating. It's going to fall anyway. I'm just helping as long.
I'd go easy on the overconfidence if I were you, Eli offered.
As long as there are commanders like Admiral Thrawn, you're going to have an uphill job of it.
Ah, but there are no commanders like Admiral Thrawn.
Night Swan said with a tight smile. Not anymore. The smile faded.
Please understand that Scrim Island was my last resort. I'd tried destroying him politically. I tried persuading the High Command that he was more trouble than he was worth. But he skated clear every time. Killing him was the only way I could think of to neutralize him.
I'm sure he appreciated your earlier restraint, Eli said, frowning as the patterns of Night Swan's earlier challenges suddenly became clear. Still, Star Destroyers are pretty tough ships. The island also has only one turbo laser, and it's firing through atmosphere. He may wiggle out yet.
Night Swan shrugged. Perhaps. At this point, though, it doesn't really matter. Losing his command ship, and the ship is lost, whether he personally survives or not, is a blunder even he can't withstand. Whoever his friends are, however highly they're placed, they'll have no choice now but to turn their backs on him.
Eli had to smile at that one.
Maybe, he said. You seem to have taken an interest in his career.
I have, Night Swan said, frowning at Eli's smile. Ever since he turned the tables on my little Tabana gas theft. What's so funny?
Oh, nothing, Eli said. Speaking of the Tabana, that was a nice trick of your own. How did you get the gas out without leaving any damage to the cylinders?
Sorry. Professional secret.
So what? Eli countered. You're going to kill me anyway.
Actually, I'm not, Night Swan said. Not unless you make trouble. My target was Thrawn, not you.
Thanks, Eli said dryly.
Not sure whether to be flattered or insulted. Though even Scrim Island may not be enough.
I gather you don't know how Thrawn happened to be admitted into the Navy in the first place.
I assume the appointment was pushed through by one of his friends.
Night Swan's eyes narrowed as he studied Eli's face.
No, he said slowly. Not just a friend. A non-human from the unknown regions. It would have to be someone very highly placed. No, wait.
His eyes widened.
Helen Brimstone,
he breathed, leaning forward over the desk.
That was him?
That was who?
Eli asked, reflexively shrinking back a little. Night Swan's sudden intensity was more than a little intimidating.
Helen Brimstone!
Night Swan murmured again, his eyes fixed on Eli.
You really don't know?
Apparently not.
So that was Thrawn,
Night Swan said, his gaze drifting to somewhere over Eli's shoulder.
I heard about it a couple of years ago, from someone working the Thrugi asteroids. There was this unknown non-human, blue skin, glowing red eyes, who'd somehow teamed up with one of the Jedi generals fighting in the Clone Wars.
Eli felt his throat tighten.
Anakin Skywalker,
he murmured. In a flash, Night Swan's eyes came back, an invisible hatch seeming to slam shut over the memories.
Yes, General Skywalker, he said,
his voice wary.
So you do know this story?
All I know is that Thrawn once met the man, Eli said. He wouldn't tell me anything else.
The desk intercom beeped. For a moment, Night Swan continued to lock gazes with Eli. Then, leaning back in his chair again, he touched a switch.
Yes?
We searched the freighter, sir,
a faint voice came.
No one else aboard. But listen, the engine compartment's showing a radiation leak.
A radiation leak, you say?
Night Swan repeated, raising his eyebrows at Eli.
Yes, sir, and it looks bad. You think we should tractor the whole thing out of the bay before the reactor goes critical?
Oh, I doubt we need to go to such extremes, Night Swan said. How many troops do you have with you?
All six. You said to be careful.
So I did, Night Swan said.
Get everyone together by that hatch and figure out how to get in. There should be an override control near the main release.
Wait a minute,
the man protested.
You want us to go in without radiation suits?
You won't need them, Night Swan assured him. It's just another Imperial or two hiding among the battles. They'll be armed, of course, so continue being careful.
Got it.
Night Swan touched the intercom switch again.
Really? He asked Eli with a wry smile. A radiation leak?
Eli shrugged, stifling a curse.
Of all the ploys for Thrawn to pull out of his hat, it had to be one Night Swan already knew.
It is a classic.
So it is, Night Swan agreed. Though like you, I don't know whether to be flattered or insulted.
You're probably wishing you'd tried something else.
I didn't know I'd be playing to an audience who already put on the same show.
True, Night Swan said. I hope that whoever's in there doesn't put up a fight. Simcoe's people aren't too bright, but they're very good shots.
I'm sure they are,
Eli said with a sigh.
However this worked out, Night Swan was in for a surprise. He'd either have Thrawn himself, or he'd have his body.
But you were telling me about Thrawn and Skywalker, Night Swan continued.
No, I already told you about Thrawn and Skywalker,
Eli corrected.
Everything I know. That Thrugi story sounds interesting, though.
I'd rather talk about you, Night Swan said. With Thrawn about to leave the stage, your career will finally be out of his shadow.
He raised his eyebrows.
It has been rather in his shadow, hasn't it?
Eli smiled.
Once, he'd indeed felt that way. But not anymore. Not for a long time.
I'm not worried about it, he assured Night Swan. The future is what you make of it, as my father used to say. I'm a commander. I have a fairly decent list of victories on my ledger, and I'd like to think I've picked up one or two friends along the way.
Really? Night Swan said. Because Thrawn doesn't seem to have. Not politically astute at all, from what I hear.
He snorted.
As for you, my young idealist commander, do you really think you have any friends on Coruscant? A wild space nobody who spent his entire career as a house pet to a non-human?
It's not like that, Eli insisted. You saw how they came around with Thrawn.
Probably because favors were bought or sold, Night Swan said. You really need to learn more about Coruscant.
The intercom pinged again, and he tapped the key.
Yes.
Sir, it's Simcoe,
the man's voice came.
We've searched the engine compartment, and there's...
He was cut off by an explosive concussion erupting from the intercom speaker. An instant later, Eli felt a quieter echo of the blast through the bulkhead behind him. And suddenly, the room erupted with a thunderous cadence of the universal abandoned ship alarm. Night Swan snatched up Eli's blaster from the desk with one hand, jabbing at the intercom with the other.
Captain,
he called over the cacophony.
Captain, what's going on?
Eli braced himself.
You'll know, Thrawn had promised.
Reaching casually to his insignia plaque, Eli pressed the innermost tile.
Night Swan caught the movement, turned the blaster warningly toward his prisoner,
as the holdout blaster in front of him exploded into a blinding cloud of smoke.
Eli was out of his chair in an instant, wincing as Night Swan's blaster bolt sizzled through the space he'd just been occupying and shattered the back of the chair.
For a fraction of a second, he thought about trying to counterattack, realized it would be suicidal, and instead sprinted for the hatch. If he could get it open before Night Swan's vision cleared, he might make it. He was nearly there, his hands stretched out toward the release, when the hatch slid open of its own accord, and a looming figure charged inside. A blaster gripped in his hand.
Eli slammed into him at full speed, sending the man toppling backward onto the deck and squeezing out an agonized woof as the impact knocked the air out of his lungs. Eli grabbed his blaster, twisted it out of his grip, slammed it across the side of his head to make sure he stayed down, then scrambled to his feet and made for the docking bay. Even over the noise, he could hear multiple shouts and running footsteps as the rest of the crew reacted to the alarm. Fortunately, he didn't have far to go. He burst through the hatchway into the repair bay, into a churning honey hive of activity. Everyone who hadn't yet made it out of the main ship seemed to be there, some of them climbing into damage control equipment, most of them sprinting toward the various ships with the clear intent of getting out. And more men and women were streaming into the bay every second. Sooner or later, Eli knew, one of them would spot him. Clenching his teeth, he turned toward his freighter, hoping that blast had been Thrawn getting rid of Simcoe's boarding party. A blaster bolt sputtered past him, jerking him back and nearly throwing him off his feet. He grabbed for balance, lost the fight, and came down awkwardly on one hand. Spinning around, he brought up his borrowed weapon, wondering if he would even have time to get off a shot before his attacker nailed him, and spotted Thrawn a quarter of the way down the bay, a blaster in his hand, beckoning to Eli from the entryway of one of the other freighters. Bounding back to his feet, Eli sprinted for the ship. 30 seconds later, he was there, racing up the ramp and through the hatch. Thrawn had already disappeared, presumably to the cockpit. Eli locked down the hatch, double-checked that the seal was holding, then headed forward. Thrawn was seated in the pilot's chair, the displays and indicators already up and running.
"Welcome aboard, Commander," he said, as Eli maneuvered his way through the cramped space to the co-pilot seat. "We should be clear before they realize we're not part of their group."
"So that's why we're taking this one instead of ours?" Eli asked, as he began strapping in.
"An unexpected bonus," Thrawn said. "My primary goal was data that might have carelessly been left uncleared on this ship's computer. Navigational records, in particular, that might point us to bases and supply lines."
He sent a quick sideways look at Eli.
"You were taken to their leader, I assume. Was it Nightswan?"
"Yes," Eli said, frowning in sudden understanding. "You knew it would be him?"
"I didn't know for certain, but I suspected."
"Why didn't you tell me?" Eli demanded. Thrawn always played his cards close to his plaque, but this was pushing it too far. "Knowing who I was up against could have been extremely useful."
"On the contrary," Thrawn said, "you would hardly have been able to produce a convincing performance had you not been genuinely surprised."
"So you just walked us into his trap?"
"He needed to believe we'd been caught unawares," Thrawn said. "Otherwise, he would have been on his guard."
"He and his crew," Eli said, the anger fading. As usual, once Thrawn explained things, he could see the tactical logic. "I presume you were never in the engine compartment?"
"Correct," Thrawn said. "I hid in the escape pod, cowling until the boarders had moved aft, then left and found the abandoned ship control."
"After setting up a bomb," Eli said. "Let me guess, the same gimmick blaster power pack trick you used to get off your exile planet?"
"Yes," Thrawn said.
The status board went green.
"Time to return to Baytom."
He keyed the drive, and they shot out of the bay. Eli tensed, but no one opened fire on them.
"And see how much of Admiral Durrell's task force survived?"
"Hopefully more than you fear," Thrawn said. "But we shall see."
"I told Nightswan the Star Destroyers were tough ships,"
Vanto said, shaking his head in amazement as he gazed out the viewport at the regrouped 103rd. "But this is borderline unbelievable."
"They weren't under bombardment for long," Thrawn said. "Captain Brento had instructions